Welcome, everybody, to another edition of Double Crossed Radio, coming to you live from the state of Jefferson, or the Jefferson Republic. And tonight's show is going to be a preview of the 4th of July, the coming 4th of July, Independence Day, and the document which separated us from the King of England and the British Empire. And we're going to be deconstructing that and going through it with our interpretation of what all this stuff means. We're glad that all of you have joined us. But we're going to be, this is going to be a total double cross show tonight with just Drew, Colby, and myself. So let's say hi to Drew and Colby.
Hey, how's it going, Chuck?
Going great. How about you, Colby?
Not too bad, Chuck. How are you doing?
All right. I'm doing great. And we have a lot to go over tonight, and we're going to try and also as we go through this, we're going to try and kind of relate some of it to current events as they're happening now in regards to some gun rights issues and maybe some immigration issues. But in the meantime, let's just get started. This was Declaration of Independence was signed and made read publicly on the 4th of July, 1776. And the public reading started out like this. This is the unanimous declaration of the 13 United States of America, and it's excuse me. It's important to note that in this original format, the original document as it's written out, the word "United" is not capitalized. It's just an adjective of the word "states," telling them what kind of states they were. So it was 13 United States of America. It was a plural, states of America, therefore plural. And this is really significant. And I think it's one of the, I mean, if you just stopped right there, that's in that title, that says a lot about the founding of the United States. And this significance, though, is apparently either ignored or it was lost on the future President Abraham Lincoln, because he was of the opinion that the Union created the states, and that's patently false. But that was his view, and that's why he said the Union must be preserved, and he wouldn't allow the Southern states to secede. And there was a civil war; it cost 750,000 people their lives. So we'll continue. Anybody, by the way, do you guys have any comment on that? As I keep going here, I got to go close the door.
No, each state was a sovereign nation. So it wasn't the United States of America, you know, in the formal sense. It was actually, it should have been a lowercase u, a lowercase s with a capital A. But that has since been changed, and that was one of the complaints that we've had as we've worked to form the Jefferson Republic, that the current United States of America is a fraud, you know, and we don't want to be a part of that. We're not anti-America, but we don't want to be a part of the corporate construct that is the United States of America. It's a corporate construct. That's not what the founders created.
Correct.
It's something that banksters created.
The issue that most people have, honestly, is the fact that nothing's controlled. We don't control anything. The state of Jefferson was supposed to be actually indoctrinated under, what was it, Theodore Roosevelt. When Pearl Harbor happened, it was sitting on his desk. And then Pearl Harbor happened, and honestly, at that point in time, the real attrition happened, as other people like Jordan Page would say, the real attrition happened. We got shoved off to the side, and no one cared anymore, and it never happened like it was supposed to.
Well, it was Franklin Delano Roosevelt, and it was just that there was an election that was supposed to take place on the 8th of December, and on the 7th of December, Japan attacked Pearl Harbor, and they just tanked the election and decided to support the war effort instead. So, But yes. Okay, let's get in here. The very first sentence, and this is a long first sentence, so try and follow all this in your minds. When in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them, a decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to separation. So, what are you guys' take on this? First sentence, that's a long one. They knew how to write stuff in those days.
Well, that pretty much sums it up, that our rights are, we get our rights from God. We get our rights from the divine, and our rights are not bestowed upon us by the government. A lot of people get confused with, with the Bill of Rights, saying that, I want my Second Amendment right protected. Well, you have certain rights just by virtue of the fact that you exist.
Yeah, and it also,
Drew's correct.
It also speaks to, there's a voluntary nature of the association between people and government. And that's almost a statement of anarchy. That if government, you kind of assume it, or it implies that if government is not satisfactory to the people, then they should, disconnect the bonds between them and that government. And in this case, is between the King of England and the colonies. But I think that they would say that should hold true for all human societies. And the governments that they put in place to govern them, is that when those governments no longer serve them, it's time to say goodbye, divorce themselves from that government. What do you guys think about? You think I'm reading too much into that, or
no? It just makes me think. United States of America, it's not you, it's me. Oh, hold on a minute. No, it's you. Sorry, but I want a divorce.
That's great. That's awesome, Drew. No, that's exactly kind of how I was feeling. I was reading this today, and sometimes I read these out loud, so it brings in different thoughts than if I just read it to myself. And yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking. So yeah, they're talking about a divorce. Okay.
The Declaration of Independence actually did a lot of good things. It said that people are people, and they have their own rights, inalienable from government. And it said the Creator, which is something that most Christian nations, which we have honestly found ourselves on in the United States of America, is a Christian nation, still respect the fact that even if you don't like your Creator, even if you disagree with your Creator, you still have something that created you. So it took in the scientific fact, even with the New Age bullshit that we're dealing with now, that thinks it controls everything. So atheism, which where you have nothing but science that created you, we actually left the interpretation open to the point where it doesn't matter. But the problem is that so many people use that religious injection against what was actually founded to produce something that's worth a lawsuit or other things like that. And it doesn't make any sense. Like they go in one side of the agendas with it, because they're like, oh, well, gay people have got to be recognized. Well, they are recognized. It's in this documentation already, and you're not realizing it, and they never do. So it's really one of those things where the Declaration of Independence did everything for everyone, but nobody really realizes it, because back then it was the men. Is how it was worded. It's not really the same.
Yeah, well, that's this kind of leading to the next sentence. So I'll just skip into this. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, and some people say unalienable. and that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And this is the most often quoted portion of the Declaration of Independence, but few people really take the time to analyze what it means. Now, Colby's done exactly that. I mean, he's gone through it, and I always had a prepared statement and made several of the same points. If this was truly something to be promoting Christianity, I think they would have said Christian God instead of Creator. They would have said something that was...
You just proved two different points, though. Unalienable and inalienable are two different things. Unalienable are rights that cannot
unalienable,
be taken away.
Unalienable means they can't be taken away, and unalienable means that... I forgot what Michael Badnarik said about that, but he talked about that when I was down in Wairika. But it just means that they're not... governments are not able to extinguish those rights. But I was just saying that the founders, they were by and large Christians or maybe kind of agnostic. But this statement was meant to include people that believed in God and people who maybe didn't, or people that believed in God in a different way. I don't know if they were too familiar with Islam, but certainly they were familiar with the Jewish religion. And I think that they meant this as a statement said that all men, regardless of what they believe, were made by the same creator or whatever, and that this higher being is the one that we received our rights from. Whether we did or not, no man should have a right to another man's life, liberty, or happiness. And that's just kind of how I took it from that.
Well, the founders were definitely deists, and in my studies of Ben Franklin, although he was probably Illuminati, but Illuminati at that time wasn't necessarily some kind of Satan worshipping child sacrifice cult like thing that it is today. But Franklin, when he was younger, didn't consider himself to be a Christian. I would even say that he was bordering on an atheist. He was kind of run along the lines of being an atheist. What he thought was that you should try to strive to live a virtuous life. That it didn't matter if there was a God or a creator watching over you that would punish you if you did something wrong. That you should strive for virtue, no matter what, just because that was the right thing to do, and that as a human being, the difference between right and wrong, and you should choose right. Later, as he grew older, his position changed, and he became a Christian, or at least so he wrote in his autobiography, and so he came back around. And I think that often happens to people as they get older, and they want to hedge their bets.
I've seen that.
Yeah, well, yeah, it makes sense. You're getting there to the end, and so, but then again, too, he might have seen God perform some miraculous things, and if you pay attention, you will see things happen that are inexplicable, and perhaps he had some experiences that led him to believe that Christianity was the way to go. But no matter that, I think that the founders were definitely deists. However, they weren't trying to establish any kind of religion.
And I agree with that. So anyway, I think a lot of people are familiar with this, with that part of the Declaration, because that's the one that everybody talks about most of the time. And I think it's been analyzed by many, many, many people. I think it's the rest of the document that's really interesting. So I'm going to move on unless you have something more to add, Colby.
Nope. No, sir, I'm definitely good with it.
Okay. So the next sentence goes, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. That whenever any form of government becomes destructive to these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it and institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Now, I think it's important in here to notice that the words safety and happiness are capitalized. So those are major concerns that Jefferson had for any society. And that these are the things I think that were they felt that they were losing, that they were becoming less safe. And they certainly, the happiness, when they said happiness, they mean being able to do what you want to do. You want to be able to pursue the things that you choose to pursue in your life. They may not be what's best for society in every case, but as long as they don't hurt anybody else, you should be able to pursue them. And in general, that seems to have been very effective for this country in the first hundreds or so years of its development. What do you guys have to say about this sentence?
I think more along those lines, we've been silenced. I mean, we have Facebook conducting undercover wars to see how we're going to react to things. We've got and they're honestly paid by the people that we fund tax-wise. I mean, we so much shit is just going on all the time to actually see what we're going to do, how we're going to react. You know, it's almost like quasi-wars to see, or are the people going to actually get off their asses and come and do something, or are they not? And it's appalling that we actually have a government that wants to see these things.
Mm-hmm.
Mixed with the police state, I think it's really scary. I mean, it's a full frontal war on the people that want to actually spread truth and be righteous and say, hey, look, we don't want to hurt anybody, but if you do this, we will show it, and we don't care.
Well, we definitely are being governed by people that are making us less safe, and they do things like, they've done things like, they've created the TSA, they've created Homeland Security and these things to try to make people think that they are more safe, but they are less safe. And you know, and as they go and cause wars and intervene in the affairs of other countries, they make us less safe. When they fund Islamic militants, fund people who want to do us harm, they're making us less safe. And they are going to use these people. You know, they've used Al Qaeda already. This IS, which is now just IS, the Islamic State, is going to be brought over here, and we'll have to deal with this organization up close and personal. So we're less safe, and I think that many of us are not happy under this system. I know that I'm not. I know that I cannot live the life that I want to live, and that there's always barriers, you know, that are imposed by government that keep me from doing things that really would harm nobody, and in some cases would be good. And
I would interrupt just to say, in almost every case, that'd be good in your particular example, because
thank you.
You're a very creative, industrious person.
I was just thinking today. I was thinking back.
Drew will probably have the answer to this. Actually, I went by the side of the road on a ditch across from an urban renewal project or a habitat project, and I took some of those nice cattails that are beautiful, and I planted them in a pot in my pond. Now, I was told after I got home that those are protected, and I committed a crime. Is that true?
I don't know, probably, but I don't know why cattails would be protected. I mean, they grow like weeds around here. You know, they're all over the place. But yeah, probably so. You probably, you know, there's some law that governs what you can and can't harvest from public lands. And this can extend to private lands, you know, in cases of wetland type plants too. And this is, you know, why this has gotten so insane. But what I was saying is that I was thinking back to our episode a year ago, and then just looking back over the last year, kind of reflecting upon things, kind of like what you do on New Year's Eve, you know, on New Year's Day, looking yeah. back over the past year. But I seem to feel like that on the eve of the 4th of July. And I was thinking, well, have we made progress? What have we accomplished over the past year? And I think locally we've actually made some progress with our activism, and I think that our work has been worthwhile. But when I look at things that have happened on a bigger scale, we're less free. The world has become less stable. And the federal government seems to have expanded, gotten bigger, has been imposing its will on us ever more, and we're seeing this through, you know, these Obamacare mandates and executive orders, and then the government's complete and constant manipulation of the Middle East. You know, going into things that serve us no purpose whatsoever. But I'm very disturbed when I see, you know, the creation of the Islamic State and the formation of this caliphate. That I can't believe Glenn Beck was actually right when he warned about this a few years ago. And then I thought he was completely full of it. And then we see this, you know, this Islamic State form something that hasn't existed since the Ottoman Empire, I believe, and this is all being conducted behind the scenes by our government. You know, this is just an extension of Operation Cyclone, Charlie Wilson's war that began in the late 70s, and that was when Brzezinski formed or helped not form, but Brzezinski helped Osama bin Laden fund and arm the Mujahideen to fight the Russians. And since then, you know, we've had these Muslim extremists used as basically the Swiss Army knife of the elite, you know, to accomplish what they wish to accomplish. If they want to flank enemies or take out certain countries, put in new leaders, whatever.
Think about this for a second, though.
What's that?
The National Guard just got all Apaches pulled. You owe
sure
40,000 Apaches to Iraq.
Right.
Well, we owe them 40,000 Apaches, and every National Guard agency has had all their Apaches pulled from their veto.
Well, those are
going to be... What is the National Guard for?
Well, not to be overseas fighting so-called terrorists. That's not what they're for.
President just took all of their Apache helicopters from the National Guards.
Yeah, well, guess
all of them.
They're going to go to IS.
They're going to go to Iraq, and this will get taken over, and they're gone.
Right.
They're fucking gone.
Yeah, but this is what's happening. You look at all the military gear that came back that's being distributed among the police departments. Well, this, you know, everybody knows this, that they've been pre-positioning military assets for a war. But these things are being put in place so that while this border is down, IS can just cross over and equipment's been laid out for them. And, you know, and there's ammunition hoards, you know, that we've been wondering, what does the government have planned with all this ammunition? You know, why were they even buying 762 by 39? Well, IS likes the AK-47.
Why were they buying an AK-47? Magazines.
Yeah, exactly.
Because we don't use them.
Yeah, I use
them. We don't use 7.62.
Yeah, I use them, but I know they weren't buying them for me. Anyway, the point I'm trying to make is that we are less safe. We're less safe now than we were a year ago. And I'm not and don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that you sacrifice security for safety. I'm just saying is that this government has tried to create this atmosphere where people are demanding safety and security and are accepting, you know, these new branches of government that are like a new Stasi. And they're accepting that, but they don't realize what the true threats are. You know, they're afraid of the terrorists, but they don't realize that the government is creating the terrorism. You know, and the U.S. government just basically.
See, and that's one of the things they don't really realize. I mean, I came in the army in 2001. Okay, the next summer, after I was finally indoctrinated into the little system, I went and I busted pot crops from Humboldt County down to San Bernardino County. Do you realize that's martial law? I am an active duty soldier in a helicopter busting marijuana crops. Mm. No one gives a fuck. They don't care. They see it happening. They're like, oh, you're doing good things. You're doing good things. No, you're not doing good things. You're actually breaking the fucking law of the land.
Yeah.
I realize this now, but then I didn't. I had no clue.
But that's why they recruit kids. You know, that's why they recruit you when you're young.
And that's why they make the school so stupid, yeah, or teach you so many things that aren't true and hide the truth from you in school. They don't want to have young kids out there that actually know what's going on. They'd end up with a whole bunch of people like our own David West, who just said, hey, this isn't right what we're doing, and he just refused to do it.
So,
Drew, your point is an awesome point. That's something that I was kind of thinking along some of those lines, but you put it to a different end than I was putting it to, and I think that was awesome. That was great. I hope that everybody, if you're listening to this on a replay, that you should rewind it and listen to Drew's comments again, because that was an awesome point.
Well, thanks, Chuck. This is something that we should really reflect on, you know, periodically, so that we could see, you know, where our activism is doing good. I mean, really accomplished something when we were trying to keep Syria from being taken over by the so-called FSA, which Obama was supporting, and many of us wrote letters, you know, to the Congress critters, demanding that the United States not intervene in this. Not back the FSA, and we actually got somewhere with this. You know, we actually, you know, at least slowed it down. But it's all over now, and it's sad. It's very sad. So it's like we had one little victory in that battle, but we're losing the war. You know, and the thing is that we need to be ever vigilant, because this force that's been created. I mean, just watch Star Wars. This is the clone army that's been created is going to be used to bring down this country. They're setting things up to bring forward the new world order, and the reorganization is taking place right now. And we've seen this with the creation of the IS, the Islamic State, and we're seeing this. Like, remember back in the early 90s when the USSR collapsed, we had a flood of people come over from Russia, and I encountered bunches and bunches of Russians up in Portland and Seattle.
Yeah, Russian mafia.
Well, but these were people that came over and signed up for every single program that they could. They actually took classes in Moscow so that they would know how to get on Section 8, how to apply for Social Security. And they came and they were just fully government funded. I was running apartments up there, and these Russians were coming in, and they had no jobs, no nothing, but they had all the public benefits, and they had it all wrapped up, and they took classes on how to work the American system, and you know, although the USSR collapsed, socialism was working quite well in the United States, and they signed up. We're seeing the next phase of this happening with all of the immigration coming out of South America, and it's the same sort of thing, but I think it's we're going to see greater numbers. And you know, and further destruction of the future of the people that are paying into this system. You know, you've got
that's right.
It's this. You can't. Well, I mean, they make money out of nothing. That's the only way they're going to be able to pay for all this stuff. And then you're going to see
that can't go on for forever.
Right. Right.
Eventually, people will realize it isn't worth anything.
I'm kind of getting us off of our topic here.
No, I think that this discussion is really showing how relevant the Declaration of Independence is to everyday life in this country. Every sentence in this document has relevance to today. Yeah. That's kind of why we bring it up every year.
Yeah.
Because every day, you know, next year we'll probably do another live show because we'll have another year of experience to relate to that's in this document. It's an amazing document. It's like reading the Bible.
We seriously haven't gotten to the first paragraph yet, and we already have a conversation that is so in depth that it's honestly inept. I mean, I know people that are native, or like myself, I look like the whitest guy you've ever meet, but I'm partially native from Montana, and I'm also Norwegian, so I've got Viking blood and I've got native blood. But we're not recognized. Nobody gives a shit about us. Nobody cares. You know, I mean, life in America really isn't. It's everyone's got their own little group, and they want to coincide with it. That's cool. But the problem is, we're all people. There is a border. There's a border for a reason. There's a border for a reason, because honestly, and I will quote a good friend of all of ours, Kevin, you know, sturdy fences make good neighbors. When you've got a sturdy fence on the border, you've got good neighbors. Why? Because they're not trying to cross it, and they understand that, you know what? This is our house. If I were to cross over, like other people have stated online, if me, Chuck, and Drew were to cross over right now, right, with our families, we wouldn't get a goddamn thing, except for thrown in jail for violating policy. But here it's okay.
Well, I've got a little different take on that, though, Colby. I think that, you know, before 1913, people traveled anywhere they wanted to in the world freely. And there were no fences at the border, places restricting. But at the same time, there was no handouts to the people who arrived. There was no welfare state. There was no free hospital. There was no free education. You paid for everything. And so people that came here had to work, and they actually, in working, became productive people and produced more wealth and made the United States more viable as a nation because it was producing more wealth. So it was actually a really good thing, and that could still be the same experience today, but not as a socialist country, because people come here and they're given free stuff. And why should they work? They're getting
see, but here's
stuff.
The thing is, we've got so a legal
no,
here.
I'm finished the point. So if you don't need a fence. All you need to do is stop giving them free stuff. Then they'll come here and they'll pay for what they're going to take or going to receive. And if they don't have the money, they won't get it. And they'll go back to where they came from because, you know, life was better there. So that's you don't need to have a fence. You need to have laws that are voluntary, that don't steal from one person to give to somebody else. Because somebody else can say, hey, they're handing out money they stole from these people. I'm going to go get some. And that's what's happening.
It is theft, and it definitely is, but here's the problem, is if you and I cross the border right now, we're too white-faced to be not taken as captives, so they're going to arrest us. We can't do that.
There's a lot of European-looking people in Mexico. I mean, they're not
there
they're
are
all, the majority.
There are also, but most of the problem we have here is that one. is they bring it down to heritage.
Jeff Berwick looks much paler than you, and he speaks fluent Spanish, and he doesn't have any problems at all.
Right, exactly. It's more of a demographic issue, and people try to pull it as a race issue, and it's really not.
Of course, he also has a bodyguard and a lot of money, so I kind of separate him from us also.
What occurred to me today, Chuck, is that, you know, if all these people that want to be lords of the state, all these people that want the free stuff, that want the social welfare, if they're moving up here, if they're moving up here from Mexico and signing up for everything, well, maybe, you know, Berwick's right. He's down there in Acapulco. So, you know, maybe, you know, that's the place to be. If all the socialists are heading up here and the anarchists are heading down there, maybe Jeff's onto something.
Yeah, I was thinking about that last week, actually. It wasn't exactly that exact same words, but it was kind of like, yeah, of all these bad criminal types and people that aren't, you know, can't, they're letting them out of jails and all sorts of stuff. They're coming from these countries. Maybe those countries are better places to live than they used to be. It'd be a good place to check out. Yeah, I agree. That's a good point. Let's move on to the next sentence, because we're almost done with the first paragraph. Prudence indeed will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes, and accordingly, all experience hath shewn that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. So this is kind of saying two different things here in this sentence, but it's I think they're both pretty important. First one being that you shouldn't just change government on a whim. And the second one is probably a little deeper. Mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. So, you know, it's like, that's kind of like that quote from Harriet Tubman that Berwick shared with us, that I freed 1,000 slaves. I could have freed 1,000 more, but they didn't know they were slaves. And that's kind of the same type of thing that Jefferson is saying here. What other thoughts do you guys have?
Well, I was trying to look up that quote on the level of tyranny. I'm paraphrasing. The level of tyranny that a people will have imposed upon them is equal to that they will tolerate.
Yeah, you did it pretty close to exactly right.
I wanted to cite the quote there, but I can't on the fly. So
we'll say that's a quote is attributed to many.
Yeah. Well, you could attribute the paraphrase to me.
Okay.
I pretty much, you know, I've had my fill of tyranny, and I won't tolerate it, you know, any longer. So, you know, that puts me in a very, very risky position, but we really don't have anything to lose. And especially, you know, as I was discussing earlier, we're seeing things accelerate. We've seen the tyrants gain ground over this past year, and, you know, and just by focusing local, you know, we've been able to gain a little bit of ground where we live, you know, in our near vicinity. But we're kind of surrounded, you know, by great evil, and we have a lot of people that are tolerating a high level of tyranny because they don't know what real freedom is.
Yeah, how many people, when you get into discussion with them, will tell you we need taxes? Or when they were discussing the election for the Jefferson Republic, they say, "Well, how is the government going to be funded?" You know, they just assume that those are things that have to be. You can't have life without taxes and government.
Yeah, I mean, who will build the roads that have tight little turns in them in the middle of neighborhoods to?
But my roads. What about my roads?
Yeah, what about them? But people can't think beyond that. However, some I believe actually like the fact that government controls these things, because especially among progressives, progressives believe that government is by them, you know, that we still have a government of the people, for the people, by the people, so on and so forth. And so this is really, it's naive of them, but they do believe that, and they think that, you know, Obama is their guy, that he's looking out for them, and that they don't need guns because their president has drones and he'll protect them, and this sort of thing. But also they feel empowered by this belief in government. So, I mean, I was complaining today about the city of Ashland, where I own a couple of businesses in Southern Oregon, and people are always messing around trying to control our lives. Like, they decided that Main Street needed to go on a road diet. So we had this nice big Main Street, four lanes wide. Well, now it's only two lanes with bike lanes on each side that nobody uses.
And but, traffic backed up from traffic light to traffic light.
Right. And there's a greenway that runs along the creek that's only for bicycles and pedestrians that runs parallel to this whole thing. So, you know, that's been in place for years and years.
There's a little bit of a problem with greenway, though. I mean, people get their heads cut off, and no offense. I mean, I know David Grubbs personally. He used to actually – we were going to start a band. He played with me at my house, but the issue is they don't care. They don't care.
Well, yeah. I mean, David Grubbs almost gets his head cut off. The people want to impose gun control, you know. But that's
or bike lanes.
Yeah, but yes, but bike lanes. But
why?
But hold on. That section of the greenway wasn't even along the creek. That section is basically a sidewalk.
It's next to a park that's frequented by everyone.
Yeah, but that was basically a sidewalk. I mean, I go through there all the time.
And now they're like, oh, no. County initiative, you cannot have guns in the greenway.
Did they do that?
No, not yet. They're looking, looking at it.
Wait a minute. Wait, I haven't protested that.
Yeah. They can't do that without
they're actually looking at it.
Well, this other thing in here, and this is something to just let you know that even the people back then were, I don't think they totally understood everything that Jefferson was saying, because here they had thrown off the rule of the Brits, they'd fought a war to free themselves, and they were free, and they started out with the Articles of Confederation, which was a pretty decent document. It was very good, really, in a lot of ways, but they decided after just a short period of time to abandon it, despite the thing that he said governments should not be changed for light and transient causes. They did, and that was mainly due to Alexander Hamilton, and they replaced it with the Constitution. And even though the Constitution was superior in some aspects, it had some fatal flaws written into it. The Commerce Clause, the way they accounted for the slaves as people, saying they were 3/5 of a person, that kind of goes against the whole founding principles of your nation. And the court system was set up with the lifetime appointments, and it became kind of a like an oligarchy or something. It was they were almost like a small kind of a kingdom of something, a kingdom of the courts. So those things were not well thought out. They and yet this was only a few years after the Declaration had been written, and people in those days read almost everything that they could get their hands on, because there was no TV, there's no radio. Reading was their only occupation for, any kind of mental stimulation. So this was written, I bet you almost everybody in the colonies had read the Declaration of Independence, but they really didn't take this to heart, that government should not be changed for light and transient causes, because right away they did. And to their, because it, you know, they didn't really just try and fix the small parts that were wrong with this, starting over again and putting these other things in which had problems. We ended up with a civil war, and 750,000 people lost their lives because they hadn't really addressed the slavery issue. They hadn't, you know, it might have been better to have two separate confederations of states, one in the north and one in the south. I don't know if there's anything that justifies 750,000 people dying. But we're going to move on. The next sentence. When a long train of abuses and usurpations pursuing invariably the same object evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty to throw off such government and provide new guards for their future security. Can't we say the same thing today?
Absolutely.
Do we have to list all the abuses that our government throws on us on a daily basis? I mean, I'm sure all of you have your own things that you suffer under. Everybody's got a different thing that they're being persecuted through, either a regulation or tax situation, student loan. There's the being abused in airports, the NSA spying. There's just militarization of the police and the military training for the police. So they go around and they just shoot dogs at the drop of a hat. So there's just tons of things that our government has changed the way we've done. And because they've done it slowly, we've just kind of accepted them because that's what governments are supposed to do. That's when you're in school, you learn that you're supposed to obey the authority figure. That's what schools are mainly for. And so you get up to this point where you just say, oh, they're the authority figure. We obey them. We do what they say. They're the government. We do what they say. And they just, as you said earlier, Drew, that quote, the tyranny that we get is the tyranny we're willing to accept. So I don't know if we need to say much more about this one. I mean, I kind of just restated everything I just said there, but this is true. This has been true from the beginning, from the dawn of history of mankind. This has been true. So it's not something that's new under the sun, and it's certainly present today. Okay, continuing. Such has been the patient sufferance of these colonies, and such is now the necessity which constrains them to alter their former systems of government. And I thought this would be a good time to talk about some of the sufferings that we have right now in our society. We have about 10 minutes left, so we can't talk forever, but presently, unemployment has been above 20% for 7 years. Inflation, despite what they tell us, has been in the range between 8% and 12%, and that represents how fast your money is being destroyed. Our wealth is being stolen through taxation and inflation, and we are burdened with regulations that make it nearly impossible to generate any wealth. And what wealth we do get is destroyed through taxation and inflation. And we are constantly spied upon in order to protect our freedom. If you can believe that, that's the rationale for doing it. We're going to take your freedom in order to protect your freedom. This is kind of a George Bushism, I think. So, what other things are you people suffering from? I mean, Drew, I know that the regulations, you could probably talk for another hour on regulations.
Yeah, and the regulation is why we have such high unemployment. It goes hand in hand, mm-hmm. You know. I'll never create an organization that gets to the point where I need to have employees, you know. I'm not interested in that. I'm not playing the game anymore. I used to be very very productive in my community and created jobs in my community, and I'm going out of my way not to do such things. The system has broken the small business person, completely destroyed them, and I really feel for people that are in that mid-sized, you know, business area. I mean, they're in a position where they, you know, mid-sized businesses absolutely have to have employees, and so now they've got, you know, all the Obamacare stuff, you know. In addition to all the other regulations that go on top of things. So you've got regulations, you know, that govern, you know, your specific trade or line of business, and then you've got EPA issues, and then you've got OSHA, and then there's all the other unemployment laws, and it just goes on and on and on. It just gets completely so complicated that you can't.
Yeah, the minimum wage laws.
Yeah.
If you had no minimum wage laws, there would be no unemployment. It would be completely voluntary. Only people not working, people who didn't want to work. There'd be a job. There's a job out there for everybody at a certain price.
Yes, there is.
And it may not be enough to live on. You may have to combine your resources with a couple other people in order to put a roof over your head and food on the table. But that's the facts. And, you know, 100 years ago, people could live that way without having to have all these other things given to them by the state because the Federal Reserve hadn't destroyed our money, stolen the value of your labor.
We've gotten to a point where you have to ask permission to do virtually anything, especially when it comes to operating a business. And that's why we have such high unemployment, and you have entrepreneurs that aren't interested in being creative and developing new lines of business, developing new products, creating jobs.
Well, they do, but they're all offshore.
Yeah. But this ties to how we defeat this government, how we move on and reorganize. And this isn't about, you know, fighting some sort of armed revolution. It's about leading ourselves in a new direction. All we have to do is make a choice, and it's not without risk. I mean, so many people, you know, will go, they'll lean on their Second Amendment and go, well, I got my guns so I could fight my government and all this and that, you know, and they want to go to Bundy Ranch, you know, and have their stand with the BLM or whatever. But it doesn't have to be like that. It doesn't have to be violent. You're not going to accomplish very much at all doing that. You are going to accomplish so much more by saying, I'm not participating in the system anymore. You know, I'm going to go do my thing, and I'm not going to follow your rules anymore. I'm going in my own direction, and I'm going to tell other people about it, and they're going to follow me there, and we're going to ignore you. We're going to ignore your rules and regulations. We're going to ignore your taxes. We're going to ignore your fees. We're going to ignore your license requirements, and we're moving on. We're going to recreate our economy. Where we live, this is how we beat them. This is how we defeat them, and this is doable. And I see something like this, a revolution being led by the creative class, the entrepreneurs, because people need jobs, people need work, and they're going to be attracted to people that are creating opportunities when there aren't any at all in the normal system. And this is my master plan right here.
And that's a voluntary interaction. People who have less skills are very willing to work with somebody or for somebody who has the imagination and creativity to create a process that can make something other people want. And they can trade their labor to help in the production of this valued commodity. And in doing so, they can make a living and raise a family. It's when you start putting all these regulations on things that are supposed to help those people that you drive them out of the workforce because they don't have the skills to make their own way.
So you've got like 4 minutes to blast through the rest of this.
Well, we're going to skip to the last paragraph, last sentence. Okay, and for the support of this declaration, with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. These men that signed the Declaration of Independence, they were willing to die for each other and spend their fortune, and several did. I noticed in chat that Becky is a descendant of John Hancock, and he was one of the people that spent his entire fortune on this war. And most of them, most of all, they bound themselves to each other with their sacred honor, which very few of them betrayed. I don't think, and I really don't know if any of them did or not, but Benedict Arnold comes to mind, but he wasn't there signing this paper. But so my question is, how much are we willing to risk to be free? Our fortune? The money's going to be worthless someday soon. Your life? A chance of a brighter future can inspire men and women to take great risks. So, you know, would you prefer to live as a slave or die trying to be a free man? You know, that's saying that I'd rather live trying to be free than to die on my knees? And what about sacred honor? All of us are going to be judged by those who depend on us and our families, our children, our wives. And they're depending on us to make the right choices and to be leaders. And this is really important, that those of you who really understand these concepts, you start to become voices in your communities to change things. The freedom movement back at the turn of the century, but at the start of this century, was very hard to find. There was Ron Paul and a few of his followers, and that was about it. Maybe there's a couple thousand people that have identified themselves with some kind of a freedom movement. There are millions of us now. Literally, I was talking to Eric the other day, and Eric Dubin of the News Doctors, and he said he thinks it's close to about 30 million people. So that's almost 10% of the people. Dollar Vigilante ran a column that 10% is the tipping point when 10% of the people can actually make the rest of the population change, because their ideas will start to become the dominant ideas. It doesn't happen like overnight, but it happens in a short period of time, really. So I want you to know that if you want to be free, it's possible. And you just have to stand up for what you know is the truth and what you know is right, to read the Declaration of Independence and study it and understand it, because this is one of the most amazing documents that's ever been written in the history of man. I want all of you to have a happy 4th of July and take some time to reflect on tonight's show and the future course of events that are possible for our nation, and to find some people of like mind, pledge your support and your sacred honor. The revolution, it is not going to be televised. So, you guys have any closing comments?
Just over the past year, look at issues that you can change on the local level. And work on that. Organize with other people. You know, we fought gun control here, and we won. We almost formed a new nation. The Jefferson Republic got 45% yes votes. I think that's next time around we're going to pull this off. You could actually change things. So over the next year, start looking for opportunities where you can change things right where you live. Thank you and good night. We'll see you next week.